Okay. So tonight I want to talk about this word that we don't use a lot, but it's an interesting word called vicissitude. Anybody familiar with this term, vicissitude? And it's an aspect of impermanence. It's also an aspect of really day-to-day life. Things change. And it's an aspect of things that are paradoxical. So we see things in vicissitudes like pleasure and pain is a vicissitude, right? That there's pleasure and there's pain. I included that in the meditation. You get both and they change. Sometimes you're in pleasure, sometimes you're in pain. And that there's ups and downs associated with life. And we don't really like that so much. So the definition that I have here, let's see if I can bring it up. Is a change of circumstances or fortune, typically one that is unwelcome or unpleasant. The quality or state of being changeable, natural change or mutation, visible in nature or in human affairs. A favorable or unfavorable event or situation that occurs by chance. A fluctuation of state or conditions. I like that one, a fluctuation of state or conditions. And so we find that this is something that's happening to us all of the time. And I don't do so well with the vicissitudes of life in terms of ups and downs and gain and loss and pleasure and pain and praise and blame, which is one of my favorite ones. And a lot of my friends love the vicissitude of praise and blame. You ever notice that sometimes you get praise for certain things? And you get blamed for certain things. If you ever recognize that you've gotten, you'll do one thing and somebody will praise you and somebody will blame you and you get really confused. Well, which is it? Right. What's going on here? And the reason I bring this up is, you know, one of the things that's happened to me recently is I'm in this vicissitude of a motorcycle accident. So probably many of you know, back in the middle of October, I was in a really, really bad motorcycle accident, and I almost died. And, you know, I was in the hospital for 6 weeks. And I think most of us would categorize that as a painful vicissitude and a sense of loss. I couldn't walk. I almost died. You know, it was very challenging at times. I had a really bad ICU psychosis. I had crazy delusions. I thought I was in other countries and I thought there was water shortages in the world and I was part of these international conspiracies. I mean, I thought some crazy shit was going on. You know? And now, 5 months later, I'm actually experiencing a lot of benefit from my motorcycle accident. I have a lot more space in my life than I did. I'm currently on disability, so I'm not having to work every day, which I usually have to do. And you know, I have a kind of a new outlook on things that I didn't have before. So it's weird to say, like I was joking with him the other day, I said, yeah, that motorcycle accident really was kind of nice. It's like, that's fucked up. You can't say that. I was like, but no, it's true. It's both, isn't it? It's both. And so that's the trick of vicissitudes when we look at trying to look at vicissitudes with equanimity, which is just a kind of a weird Buddhist term, but trying to look at life as both and. Yes, there was a lot of loss associated with my accident. A lot of people were upset with me, including my mom. And I caused a lot of suffering for a lot of people who were close to me. You know, and I was in a lot of pain. And I'm still actually in some pain and some discomfort. And I get money every month and I don't have to work. And I have all this spaciousness in my life. And people want to do things for me. And it's like, so it's a mixed bag. And so this is so important to be able to see this paradox and be able to hold that in a view where we see that, that's actually how it is. Because what happens is the mind is very efficient. And sometimes the efficiency of the mind, what the mind does is it frames things up. And either I'm a good person or I'm a bad person. Either I make good choices or I make bad choices. Either I'm in the right relationship or I'm in the wrong relationship. I either have the right job or I have the wrong job. Are you familiar with this kind of thinking? Mm-hmm. I like my life, I don't like my life. I had a good day, I had a bad day. We overgeneralize and we categorize things mostly based on whatever the current experience is. Whatever's been happening in the last 3 hours to 3 days sums up everything about me and my life, right? And so that's, you know, efficient because it allows us to kind of, you know, it's so funny when I think about the Facebook status update, right? Like, I feel like my mind is giving me a status update all the time. You're doing good, you're not doing good, this is going well, that's not going well, finances aren't so good, this isn't so good. It's always trying to frame my life up in into one picture frame. It's like this. This is like, your life is like this, right? And so what happens is then we project, it's good, it's great, it is what it is. We start to kind of identify and we kind of categorize our life through that lens. And, you know, we find that either that's pleasant or it's unpleasant or we like it or we don't like it. And then to some degree that sums up the entirety of my worth. And what happens, of course, is time passes, things change, and then you come up with a different frame. Do you do that? Do you guys do that? Well, which frame is the right frame? None of them. You know, they're all a little bit true and they're all a little bit delusional. Right? So when we deal with these vicissitudes, it really can be very helpful to see that our conditions constantly change. And that we make some good choices at times, we make some not so good choices at times. And that what that can do is that perspective can oftentimes pull us out of whatever it is that we're clinging to in the particular moment. Because we start to make a belief system around that. And to me, a belief is like clinging in the mind. Do you believe certain things about yourself to be true? I'm like this. Yeah. I'm like that. You know, and I don't know if it's true, but I've read in some neuroscience research that actually once you have a thought 7 times, you believe it. Whether it's accurate or realistic, it doesn't matter. The mind, when something occurs a certain periods of time, we think to ourselves, well, if it keeps reoccurring, it must be true. And if we look at our history, there's probably certain themes or attitudes that you have about yourself that go way back. And we oftentimes believe that, well, I have been thinking this about myself for so many years that it must be true. Right? We have a self-belief or a core belief about ourselves that goes back 15, 20, however many years. Because it continues to re-arise, we start to get tricked by it and believe, well, no, I'm like this or I'm like that. We frame that up. It's been framed up so many times, we start to believe that. And so we, of course, we have our belief systems about who we are. That's self is a big one. And how many vicissitudes do you experience? You know, I say this often because I recognize it to be so true in my experience. You know, how many different versions of you do you have in your repertoire? Right? You know, you have the I'm doing great version, I'm doing terrible version. And usually what happens is based on the most recent events of my life, I will sum up my self-worth or my value based on, you know, what's happened in the last week or the last month. Right? And I'll forget or I won't remember that the recent events, it's not enough of data to sum up my whole experience in life. And so when we practice meditation, daily practice, you know, one of the things we can start to do is we can start to become familiar with some of these themes or some of these ideas or some of these beliefs that reoccur, and they reoccur slowly over time. And we can start to get some space with them. And it even can be quite helpful to be able to categorize them in terms of themes or labeling or noting, which is a Burmese technique of meditation where we just notice or we make a note of, oh, you know, you could do very basic like future, past, what is the nature of thought? Oh, it's like, oh, shame self, or fear self, you know, whatever that category is, we start to be able to see them more objectively, and therefore we don't tighten so much around those experiences. Because the problem is, even if you figure it out, right, what happens? It changes. Right? That, which is why it's so, that's why this whole self thing is such a pain in the ass. Because as soon as you figure out who you are, you're like, oh, this is actually how I am. Then something happens and you change. And then you have to make all these adjustments to kind of frame that one up and be that particular version of yourself. So these conditions, we want to try to see if we can hold them with mindfulness and recognize them. We want to be able to see if we can hold them with equanimity. And equanimity is just kind of a fancy way of saying acceptance. Or really, I think it's mostly the way that I experience it is seeing things through the lens of both and, which destroys black and white thinking. Any black and white thinkers out there? It's either like this or it's like that. They're a good person or they're a bad person. I'm a good person or I'm a bad person. LA is the greatest city in the world or LA sucks. The big one. It's just like, you know, that's the nature of black and white thinking. That's why it's efficient. It's efficient, you know, hypervigilance and black and white thinking and these ways of summing things up is efficient, but it's not accurate most of the time. So when we can start to see that it's both and, there's a lot of actually acceptance and a lot of ease that comes with that when we find that the vicissitudes are not pleasing. Right? And we get these standard ones in Buddhism. There's four sets. Of course, there's many, many sets, but the ones that the Buddha spoke of, pleasure, pain, gain and loss, praise and blame, and status and disgrace. And I just love these vicissitudes because I love it when the Buddha says something or part of the teachings that seem very relevant to my life. I'm a big fan of relevancy. It's like, oh, this is actually, not only is this relevant, but this seems to be happening to me all the time. You know, and of course, I like to always start with pleasure and pain because that seems to be what the Buddha's pointing to as being the problem, the whole problem of the system, the mind system, the probably biochemical system of wanting pleasure, wanting to get rid of pain, the pleasure-pain dichotomy, and that we get both. We get both all the time. I was at the, before I came over, that's why I'm a little tired, I was at the Natura Spa, which is like a Korean spa in Koreatown, and I was like, they have a hot tub, and they have a cold dunk, and they have a cold room, and they have a steam room, and I'd go in the sauna, and I'd be like, it's so awesome in here, it's so hot. Exactly. Natura Spa, look it up, it's killer. It's like on, like, I don't even know where it is, I just know how to get there. It's in Koreatown. So I'd sit in the sauna and I'd be like, this is so good. And in like 15 minutes, I'm like, it's fucking way too hot in here. And I would leave. And I would go sit outside, I would cool down, I'd go sit in the cold room, and I'd be like, oh, it's so good in here. And then like 10 minutes later, I'm like, man, it's fucking cold in here. And then I like go back in the shower and wash off and go back in the steam room, and it's like so great in the steam room, and it's like, it's too hot in here. Right? Like, that's life for you, right? It's like food, right? You get, you know, like, you know, the person brings you the plate of food, and you're like, oh, this is so good. And by the end of it, it's like, you know, like, look at a plate of food when you first get it, and then, like, when you're done, it's, like, gross, right? You're like, fucking get this away from me. It's like a napkin in it, and it's half eaten, and it's just like, right? It's no good. But 12 minutes ago, it was, like, the best thing ever. You know? It's like anything. It's like everything. Everything is like that. But, you know, we sum it up, don't we? We kind of just go, it's like this, it's like this, it's like this. And then we cling to that belief or that idea. And we aren't able to see that things are happening in a process. It's like the story that they often tell around the vicissitude that I think is so good. It's like there's a farmer and his son, and they, you know, they have a big farm, and they have all these crops to grow, and it's really, really hard work. And then somebody brings them a horse. A mule, a donkey, to help plow the fields. And they're like, oh, what a gain. This is so great. We have this horse now. Then, like a couple weeks later, the son falls off the horse and breaks his arm. And they're like, oh man, maybe that horse isn't so good after all. He fell down and broke his arm. He can't work in the fields. Got a broken arm now. Then a couple weeks later, the army comes because there's a war going on and they need people to fight in the war, and the son can't go to the war because he's got a broken arm. And they're like, oh, this is great that he broke his arm. He doesn't have to go to war. You know, and then the horse dies. And it's like, oh man, the horse is dead. Now we got to go back to... And then somebody, because the horse dies, they bring him a new horse. And then it's like, oh great, that horse didn't die. We wouldn't have got this new young horse. So it's like on and on it goes. And it's like, was the horse good or was it good or bad? No, it was just dependent upon the current conditions that were happening. And so when he falls off the horse and breaks his arm, the horse is bad. But when he doesn't have to go to war, the horse is good. Right? You see how that works? It's like very, very common theme in life that happens all the time. But we usually don't have the awareness. We don't have a view, a perspective that's wide enough to kind of track all of that. Right? Because we're so caught up in the frame, whatever the current frame is. We can't really break free from that so much. And so this pleasure-pain thing, we want to be able to just kind of be like, oh, yeah, both and. You know, and gain and loss. Same thing. That horse story is a story of gain and loss. We get things, we lose things. And of course, we think that pleasure is good and gain is good, pain is bad and loss is bad. And we want to get the gain and the pleasure and get rid of the loss and the pain. Wouldn't that be convenient? But that's not how it is. That's not really true, actually. You know, just because an event of your life was painful or upsetting or really emotional doesn't mean that it was bad. It just means that that's what happened and it was a difficult experience at the time. One of the things that I did that really, really brought this to light for me is I did a lot of work with the trauma therapist, and one of the things that we did that I liked that I did more of because I liked it was timelines. Mm. Of timelining certain events in my life, and there were these traumatic events in my life, and what we started to recognize is that all of these tragic, traumatic events in my life, what followed soon after each event was some other event that actually was really, really transformative and really, really powerful that really changed my life for the better. You know, it was like I had this traumatizing accident when I was 18, and because of that accident, my friend's mom knew I was traumatized, brought me to IMS to learn meditation, and I started practicing the Dharma. And so like in each one there was like, you could trace it, and it was like, oh my God, the traumatic events of my life were actually the most profound and most beneficial experiences I've ever had. It's like people in recovery, right? Anybody here in recovery from drug and alcohol addiction? It's like you get this weird life back, right? And you're like, oh, my life is so good right now because of the fact that I fucked it up so bad. It's like, well, that doesn't make sense. But it's true, isn't it? So, you know, these categorizing things in that way isn't really that helpful, actually. Because what we find is that the events of our lives, whether they were pleasant or painful, or if they were a gain or they were a loss, is that they projected us in emotion or emotion into a different direction that may or may not have happened. So when we start to, that's why I like timelines so much, when we are able to really open up the view, a lot of times we can see that some of the most painful, challenging experiences of our lives were the events that put us into a place that we actually really value now. You know, maybe we're doing something that's really meaningful to us, that's very important to us, that maybe we would not have found had that not occurred. Does that make sense? You know what I mean? So then again, it changes the whole way we want to maybe look at these things, right? And so we have these ongoing sets, and if you spend any particular day, you'll see that you're getting things and you're losing things, and there's pleasure and then there's pain, and then there's the social construct, the relational piece around praise and blame, which is so much fun. Anybody out there sort of feel like you seek praise? You want to let people know what a good job you did at work, or you're trying to get some attention or some praise or some recognition? You know, we like to be praised. We want to be acknowledged. We want to be recognized. And again, it's not bad or wrong, but it's a vicissitude because it changes. And then we get blamed for certain things. And we do it to ourselves too, don't you? Do you blame yourself for things that you've done? You know, this brings us into the emotional arena of guilt or really shame. I blame myself, and now I feel bad about myself. I'm a blameworthy person. I did bad things, and I feel guilty for what I've done, and I feel ashamed about it. And then this is really where, you know, we get into these really dark corners of self-hatred around these habits, these psychological habits where we blame. We blame ourselves, we blame others, we praise ourselves, we praise others. Not a lot of self-praising going on, I don't feel like I meet a lot of self-praisers in my life. Maybe that's just my karma. But I find that people tend to blame themselves more. People are more likely to give themselves a punch in the face than a pat on the back for some reason. And I don't know if that's our culture, or I don't know if that's just because I teach Buddhism and people attracted to Buddhism tend to be hard on themselves. I don't know what the phenomenon of that is, but I've definitely seen it to be true. And this last one, which is oftentimes hard to translate, the last set of translations I like is status and disgrace. And so that we oftentimes feel that we might be in a place of status in our lives, or a place of disgrace, or maybe a lack of status, or maybe we have times where we are financially doing well, we have luxury and benefit, or some certain times when we've had maybe poverty or not so good. You know, and I think that, of course, we live in a culture where I think the craving for status, especially in Los Angeles, right, the craving for status is pretty huge. You know, the right car, the right apartment, the right neighborhood, the right job, the right handbag, the right shoes, the right this, the right that. This is a very status-driven city, more so than any place I've ever lived, so I'm sort of aware of it. I find it interesting. And also, too, we have to recognize times in our lives where, you know, one thing that I noticed when I did some timelining and did some inventory work around my finances and around my relationship to money is that the time in my life, this isn't true now because things have changed, but there was a period of time where the time in my life when I was making the most amount of money was actually the time in my life when I was in the most amount of debt. It's really strange. It's like I was making all this money, but I had acquired all this debt because I had all this money. I was like, I can buy shit, I'm making all this money. And I actually accumulated all this debt that when the conditions changed and I wasn't making that money anymore, I had to spend 2 or 3 years getting myself out of debt. I had like almost $50,000 in credit card debt. I was like, I don't remember buying all that shit. what did I even get? I don't even remember. 50 grand? What the fuck was I thinking? You know, that's a lot of money. And then, you know, I moved from Massachusetts down to Nashville, Tennessee, and got divorced. And my conditions, I went from making like $95,000 a year to working at a treatment center where I was making $11.88 an hour. I was like, man, I'm not going to take me the rest of my life to pay back this 50 grand. And also, too, one thing that was interesting about that time period in Tennessee when I was making really about as much money as I was making when I was 15, so there was a lot of humility and like, holy shit, I'm 35 and I'm making $11.88 an hour. I was really, really happy. You know, I was really, really happy in those conditions because it forced me to live in a very simple way. I just started training with Against the Stream, and I was reading a lot of Dharma books, and I was practicing a lot because I couldn't do anything because I didn't have any money, you know. And I was cooking a lot because I couldn't go out to eat, and I was driving a crappy car. And so I was forced to live in this way, but I really enjoyed it actually. You know, I really enjoyed the simplicity of not having a lot of money, and I was doing work that was meaningful to me at the time. And you know, I was in a lot of, you know, I wouldn't say disgrace, but in the vicissitude of luxury or poverty or rich or poor or whatever, however you want to frame that up, I was definitely in the poor poverty side of my life, and it was really some of the happiest 3 years I ever had. So we have to be very careful, and it can be an interesting kind of way to practice in the way that we categorize things as good or bad or happy or sad or, you know, the fact that we think, and I say this often, this is kind of the one of the ways in which that I, one of the platforms in which I teach from, is that if we think that we have favorable conditions in our lives, if the external conditions of my life are favorable, then I'll be happy internally. Isn't that what you, that's what you think, right? That's like the American dream. Right? And I found that to not be true, actually, at all. And I oftentimes the external conditions of my life are very unfavorable, and there's been many times in my life where the external conditions were unfavorable, and internally I was really quite happy and content. Very happy and content. And so, and they continue to change for me. You know, now I'm back to a place where I'm making more money right now probably than I ever have in my life, and I don't have any debt this time because I've kind of learned my lesson, hopefully. And I don't haven't accumulated any extra debt. But I'm sure that that will change also. So when we try to, and this is so helpful in daily life when we start to deal with just our self-worth or our attitude about how we feel about ourselves. And one thing I've noticed about emotions in this regard is generally speaking, based on how I feel emotionally, I will make a story about how well my life is going. So for example, if I have a couple, I have a fight with my girlfriend or a difficult conversation with my mom, or maybe I got whacked for a couple $100 in parking tickets, or just, maybe I've had a date. You have one of those weeks where like three or four things go bad, and you're just like, dude, I just suck at life. I feel these emotional experiences. And so what happens is I'll create a story or a narrative about my value or my self-worth based on like the shit that went down in the last 5 days, which is extremely inaccurate. I usually never use this word, but it's really not fair. Right? And likewise, the same. If I'm feeling good and I'm feeling happy, and feeling good about this person, Dave Smith, who I seem to have to deal with all the time, then my life is good. Right? And I find that I don't try to do it, but I recognize that my mind is constantly trying to give me some sort of status update about this person that I am and how well this person is doing. And a lot of times, the way that I feel emotionally plays into that in a way where it colors my perception. It colors the way that I view myself. If I'm sad, I don't feel good about myself. I give myself a hard time, or I blame myself, or maybe I feel ashamed about that, or whatever it is. I'm mad at myself. I'm like, why am I sad? I shouldn't be sad. I must be doing life wrong because I'm sad. It's like, well, maybe just sadness is an emotion that you have from time to time. It doesn't mean anything. Right? Or if I'm angry, if I'm scared. And the thing about these difficult emotions, these really, especially anger, fear, and sadness, which are kind of the three big offenders, is that when we get in a heightened sense of these emotional experiences, most of us find that we don't always make great choices. When I'm angry, I oftentimes don't say things that I normally would want to say. You ever get angry and say something to somebody you wish you hadn't said? A couple times today already. Right? Yeah. Or when I'm sad or scared, I usually try to use that. If I notice I'm having an overwhelming episode of anger, fear, or sadness, I try not to, I try to be very, very careful about what I say or what I do or what I plan or what decisions I make, because in those kind of overwhelming experiences, I'm trying to fix my life. Oftentimes, if there's a sense of overwhelm, I oftentimes end up doing things or thinking about things that aren't really helpful, or sometimes can be even destructive. You ever do that? We have a couple days where you're scheming on something, something that's probably you probably shouldn't be doing, and then like you pop out of it, you're like, oh my God, I was fucking crazy. I can't believe I was gonna do that. I was gonna sell all my shit and move to Burma, become a monk. Right? So we have these experiences, right? So when we deal with vicissitudes or really impermanence or change, one of the things that we can try to do as best we can is One thing that Matthew Brentsover used to talk about that was a practice I did for a long time is that when we get in that kind of really myopic, narrow focus, I'm like this, no one's like this, I got it framed up real good, is trying to remember that whatever's true right now, something else is true. There's always something else that's true. I'm having a really, really hard time right now, and the last couple of days have been difficult. And I had a really great month last month. And, you know, I have some stuff coming up I'm looking forward to. And my relationship is going well. And, you know, like, and. You know, trying to remember and to reflect that whatever the current experience is, whether it's emotional or there's a lot of pain or loss in your life currently, yes, that's true, and that's not the only thing that's true. There's also a lot of other things that are true that you're not being able to recognize. You're not able to widen that view, right? You're kind of myopic. You're like, no, it's all bad and wrong and terrible and it's just no good. That's it. Deal with that. Like, you know, that you can do that for a long time. Or you can say, yes, and there's other things that are true, there are other things that are happening, there's other perspectives available. And so mindfulness is a great way to kind of learn how to break out of that, that clinging to that belief or to that frame. Because that's present time awareness for you, isn't it? When those frames become... when we become locked into that view or that perception or that frame, that's current, that's happening in the context of present time, but we kind of get hypnotized by that, don't we? We fall asleep into that, and it kind of, our life becomes sort of this dramatic movie. It's like one of those terrible Lifetime specials they used to show, you know, like after school, the after school special, like we become that. And then we snap out of it and go, oh, that's not actually true, that just was some sort of... delusion, I got trapped in our story, a narrative. And they change. So that's what I wanted to talk about tonight, vicissitudes, change, experiences. So thank you for your attention. We do have quite probably 15 minutes left anyway. So I'm happy to hear any questions you might have or comments or just what your experience with these things has been.